Commanding Officer's Personal Log, HV's Surprise, Wednesday, August 2nd, 2406, 11:32 p.m. GST. Well, we're off. Not back for a week, and already I'm in command of a high-stakes covert mission against a poorly understood enemy with nebulous backup. Feels pretty good. It also feels a bit weird that our first order of business is to damn near leave the known galaxy, but one of our destinations is on the rim, and Caden assures me that the most efficient way of hitting all the points we need to hit is to go there first, and then some mumbly astrogation thing to get the Kresge on the other side. Whatever he says, I forgot everything I knew about hyperspace navigation years ago. The world we're heading to is called Nern. It's on the WDF's non-contact watch list. Seems it has a very interesting pre-industrial civilization. Kind of an Iron Age version of Barsave. Sounds pretty nifty. I'll have to try and come back to check it out sometime later. For this trip, though, it'll be a quick in and out. I'll have to go covert, try not to attract attention, or do anything obviously technological. Fortunately, we won't get there for 3 days, so I'll have time to pick up enough of the language to at least pass for a foreigner. The beauty of hyperdrive. Hurry up and wait. We can only hope the collectors don't step up the pace with their raids while we're out here getting our stuff together. Even if they do, though, there's not much we can do about it. If we jump straight into a fight with them before we're ready, we'll just end up like those poor bastards on that Earth Force battle wagon at Eden Prime. And on the upside, it's been amazing seeing so many old friends again today. I came back because I thought I could do more good here than in Valhalla. Not to see Garrus and Adams and Liara again. But I'm not going to sit here and say that isn't a big, big plus. Liara. The last time I saw her, I was going off to get killed and she was going off to stay alive. We've kept away from it so far. In her office, we talked about the mission, and since then we've been keeping it light for company's sake. But that kind of thing leaves a mark. I know it left one on me. There's a lot we have to talk about, a lot to figure out. I only hope that... Shepard looked up from the terminal built into the desk in her stateroom and said in response to the door chime, "Soapin'." A moment later, the door hissed open, and in stepped the very person in question. "Oh, hey, Liara," she said, pausing the recording. She got to her feet and gestured her guest into the small space between the foot of her bunk and the after bulkhead, which was about all there was for free floor space. "I was just thinking about you." Liara smiled a little slyly. "Oh, good to know." "Yeah, so... listen," said Shepard a trifle awkwardly. "We didn't really talk about this back in New Avalon, but..." She paused, gathering her thoughts, and then met Liara's eyes with her own and said frankly, "I want you to know, I'm not expecting that we'll just pick up where we left off." Liara stood regarding her with a faintly puzzled expression. After a second or so of that, the silence spurred Shepard to keep talking. "I mean, I'm a grown-up, right? I know the galaxy doesn't really work that way. It's been a long time, and I'm sure you've gotten on with your life." Seeing that she was still receiving the same patient, indulgent, but faintly bewildered look, she paced away in the narrow lane between her desk and her bunk, reached the far bulkhead, a matter of only a couple of yards, and turned back, blurting, "I mean, don't get me wrong, I would love to. I've been thinking about you for 118 years. The worst part about being in Valhalla was knowing that you weren't likely to show up until sometime around 3200. It's just that I don't want to be presumptuous about..." She trailed off, because now it was evident that Liara wasn't listening. She turned around and walked back over to the door, which opened automatically as she approached. For a second, Shepard thought she'd blown it somehow and the Asari was leaving, until Liara stopped inside the threshold, keyed the door shut without stepping through it, and pressed another key to shut off the activator on the outside. Shepard raised her eyebrows. "Did you just lock the door?" Liara turned to face her, smiling. "Yes, I did," she replied. Taking a step toward her, she went on, "You're right. We have a lot of things we have to talk about. A great deal of time has passed, and in many ways we will need to..." She considered her next phrase. "Learn each other again." The room was small enough that she needed only another stride to be all but nose to nose with Shepard, placing a hand gently to the side of her face. "Your first lesson," she said mock didactically, "is that, my warning to my students earlier today notwithstanding, I have always preferred hands-on fieldwork to academic research." Commanding Officer's Personal Log Supplemental, Thursday, August 3rd, 2406, 0149 a.m. GST. "Never mind. I have a message from another time. Avery Productions Unlimited and Imagination Unlimited present Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, Shepherd's 11. Act 2, Shepherd's Privateers. By Benjamin D. Hutchins, that's me, with Philip Jeremy Moyer and Jeff Depew." Jack, Subject 0, a.k.a. Not Jacqueline, a.k.a. Nilsdottir, Jennifer, etc. First generation human scion, power level K-12+. Abducted shortly after birth as part of Cerberus experiment. Purpose, elevation of human psychic potential through extremely hostile upbringing. See attached. Escaped as adolescent. Subsequent extensive criminal history, including murder, theft, piracy, vandalism. See attached. Rescued by members of WDF Nazgul Squadron during Operation Heracles prep. Later transferred to Normandy SR-1 for protection, rehabilitation. Disappeared after destruction of SR-1, missing until 2293. Worked with Team PWEI until organization's 2334 breakup. Sporadic unconfirmed sightings on Outer Rim and N-Terminus sector since then. Extremely dangerous. Sunday, August 6th, 2406. Nern, Mundus System, Bethesda Sector, Outer Rim Territories. Shepard beamed down to a remote northern area of the planet Nern's largest continent, which her Babylon Foundation factbook informed her was known by the natives as Tamriel, a bit past local noon. Going undercover on Nern, she reflected, was a bit like visiting planet Renfest, except with somewhat higher stakes for failing to be authentically period. She'd been assured that her old Valkyrie ceremonial armor would do nicely. Naturally, this armor was metal, not advanced composites, and as such it was strangely heavy to her modern sensibilities, but she'd always liked it, the heft and substance of it. She felt slightly absurd wearing it in a non-Asgardian context, but also slightly badass. It gave her a flavor of what she figured it must be like to be a Klingon. The first thing she had to do after arriving was fight a bear. With a sword, since obviously a thing like her trusty Carnifex hand cannon would be a bit blatant. This, she thought as she walked into the minuscule village of Iverstead, had rather set the tone. Still, the lady who ran the sawmill seemed to be quite pleased to take the bearskin off her hands. Well, it had seemed a shame to waste it. And to provide directions to the best, in fact, only, path up the mountain which towered over the town. This turned out to be a snowy, treacherous route involving haphazard staircases hewn into the flanks of the mountain, with occasional roaming packs of wolves, and, at one point, a creature Shepard could only compare to a kind of wampa. That was a hassle. But on the other hand, the views were stupendous, and there was a kind of mytho-historical narrative carved incrementally into monolithic icons that were arranged at waypoints along the path, like ancient stone Burma shave signs. Shepard discreetly photographed these. She could read only enough of the local language to get the vaguest idea of what they were on about, but she knew Liara would be interested. There was a great stone building athwart the path near the top of the mountain. This appeared to be some sort of monastery. The monks took little notice of their unannounced visitor. Shepard could tell that they knew she was there, but they didn't seem to care, more or less ignoring her as they went silently about their business. Rather than pester them, she passed on through and kept going up, clawing her way through the truly outstanding windstorm that was in full swing a bit further up. Wasn't much fun, but it beat fighting a wampa. At last she ran out of up to go, arriving in a wide, snowy clearing far above the tree line. The weather was clearer up here, with bright sunlight bathing the snowy rocks and the remaining small pyramid of rock that jutted up on one side to the mountain's proper peak. The only structure here appeared to be a kind of, well, Shepard wasn't really sure what it was. Its main feature was a curving stone wall about 20 feet across by 10 high. This was standing on a low stone platform and surmounted by a huge, intricately carved figure of what Shepard supposed was the local idea of a dragon. Seated on this platform under the looming head of the dragon, apparently indifferent to the chill alpine wind, was a human figure. Like Shepard, she wore old-timey metal armor, albeit of a different style, with less silver tracery and quite a lot more fur, which Shepard had to admit wouldn't go amiss after that squall by the monastery, though it left most of her arms bare. She sat, César, hands on knees, her uncovered head bowed, and didn't seem to notice as Shepard approached, boots crunching through the snow. As her visitor came within easy earshot, the woman on the platform smiled slightly and said, "Shepard." Then, raising her head to look the commander full in the face, she went on, "Heard you were back. How is Valhalla?" Shepard smiled in return. "Hiya, Jack," she replied. "It was pretty good." "Figured it probably would be," Jack said. She rose smoothly to her feet, the fittings of her armor jingling, and stepped down from the platform to shake Shepard's hand. "So what are you doing back down here?" "Oh, you know, this and that. Saving the galaxy, whether it wants it or not." Jack smirked. "The usual, then." "Pretty much." Shepard gave Jack an appraising look. She looked pretty much the same as she had when Shepard knew her before, albeit rather more heavily dressed. Slim and athletic in a wiry kind of way, she looked to be in her late 20s, though she had to be more than 140 by now. Her head was still more or less bald, mostly buzzed down to a light fuzz, but with a neatly geometric pattern carefully shaved all the way down to her scalp. And where her armor revealed her skin, she still showed signs of the intricate network of tattoos that had just about covered her body of old. At her belt, she wore an elegantly wicked-looking single-bitted war axe. "The people down in the village say you're some kind of great warrior," she said, angling a thumb back over her shoulder. Jack laughed. "Ha ha! My old Jedi master wouldn't like that," she observed. "He always used to say, 'Wars not make one great.' And then I'd say, 'Yeah, two words, Jin Shepard.' And he'd say, 'Balls.'" Shepard raised her eyebrows. "Are you telling me you're a Jedi Knight?" "Me?" Jack made a dismissive gesture. "Come on. No, I'm telling you I got thrown out of the Jedi Knights." Shepard grinned. "Okay, yeah, that sounds more like you." Jack smiled and walked over to a rocky outcrop at the edge of the clearing, gesturing expansively to the jaw-dropping view of the province of Skyrim below. Yeah, she said, I've been from one end of the galaxy to the other and seen all kinds of crazy things since you got off, Shepard. Shaolin monasteries, Jedi temples, Althenian convents, the Sisterhood of Ishtar, the shotgun-toting monks of St. Ignatius. She turned a grin to the commander and finished, I've been asked to leave them all. Shepard laughed. Same old Jack. Kinda, Jack allowed. I do a lot less random mayhem nowadays. That shit gets old. Especially after you showed me that you can do just as much wrecking stuff and nobody hates you for it if you find the right reasons for it. Well, nobody important anyway. I mean, I'm pretty sure Eclipse hates me, and I know the Cyrodiilic Empire does, but fuck 'em. Well, I'm glad I was able to teach you something, Shepard quipped. Seriously, said Jack, looking uncharacteristically solemn. I'm probably only going to say this once, but yeah, you did. I mean, I was fucked up when I met you. No two ways about that. If the Sterling twins hadn't come along and then pointed me to you, I'd be dead now, sure as hell. The kind of dead where you don't get a second chance. It took me a while to really settle, especially after you died. I went kind of feral again for a little while after that happened. But eventually, what you taught me stuck. Then her face cracked into her old smirk again, and she added, Don't get me wrong, I'm still fucked up, but now it's the good kind. She turned and started walking back toward the stone platform she'd been sitting on. Oh, hey, let me introduce you. Yo, Parr, wake up. For a second, Shepard wondered who she was yelling at, until the dragon perched atop the stone wall, which she'd taken for a sculpture, stirred and opened its eyes. This is Commander Shepard. I've told you about her, Jack told the dragon. Shepard, Parthenax. Shepard blinked. Hi. Parthenax inclined his great, craggy head and spoke Asgardian Draconic in a deep, resonant voice. Hail to thee, Storm Rider. Then, with what might have been an ironic smile, he went on, If thou hast returned to Midgard to set it right, I fear thy task will be a long one. Tell me about it, Shepard replied wryly. Jack laughed. Should have known you'd speak dragon, she said. Then switched back to standard and asked, So what's up? You're not just here to sightsee, are you? Shepard shook her head. No. I'm going after a powerful and secretive alien race that started abducting human colonies. Sounds like the Greys, said Jack. Then she paused, turning a thoughtful frown to Shepard. Hang on, you said colonies, not colonists. Shepard nodded. Their last haul was around 8,500 people, all at once. Place called Eden Prime. It's in the Traverse, yeah, I've been there. The whole place totally cleaned out? Another nod. I was there. They got everybody except one soldier who got out with Caden and me. Then destroyed an Earth Force battleship on their way out of the system. Took them 20 seconds. And what? You're going up against them like you did to the Geth back in 80? Elite commando team, little tiny ship, brass balls the size of my head? Pretty much. Jack snorted. That's a suicide mission, she said. Pretty much, Shepard repeated agreeably. Are you in? Jack eyed her skeptically for a second, then grinned. Fucking right I am. It took Jack only a few moments to gather her few possessions and say her goodbyes to the ancient dragon. Then they walked back down the mountain to the monastery. You didn't just walk through this, did you? Jack asked when they reached the windstorm. Well, what else was I supposed to do? Pole vault over it? Jack shook her head with an indulgent smile. Same old Shepard, she said. Then, with the bluish glow that had always marked her unusually strong psionic powers rippling the air around her, she took a couple of steps toward the storm, drew a deep breath, and cried in a voice that seemed like it should have been coming from a much larger person, "Lok Vakur!" And with a roll of thunder, the howling wind and blowing snow dissipated, leaving the mountain ridge as clear and sunny as the summit had been. "Nice," Shepard remarked. "It's the local party trick," Jack replied nonchalantly. "Basically, it's just yelling an old draconic with a biotic boost behind it, but people in these parts have always assumed it was some kind of magic gift from the gods." She shrugged. "Who am I to argue?" They passed into the monastery courtyard, then into the building itself. Shepard noticed that Jack carried herself here, as she had on the mountain, with confidence, calmer, surer than the half-faked badass bravado swagger she'd had when they first met. This, the monastery, the mountain, maybe Nirn itself, was a place in which she was comfortable, where she felt she belonged. The monks seemed to feel it too. They didn't speak to her either, but they acknowledged her presence with bows and deferential gestures, rather than largely ignoring her as they had Shepard on her way in. As they went down the steps into what Shepard had assumed was a kind of lobby, they met another of the monks there. Jack had nodded in cordial acknowledgement to the other's bows, but she spoke to this one. "Arngeir, I'm taken off for a while. Gotta help my pal Shepard here with some things. Try and keep the place from going completely to hell while I'm gone, huh?" The monk bowed and replied, "Of course, Dovahkiin. Skyrim will remain as you leave it." Jack smiled and thanked him. As they left the monastery, Shepard turned to her and asked, "Dragonborn?" Jack shrugged. "It's what they call people who can do the voice without being trained. Like I said, who am I to argue?" They beamed back to the surprise as soon as they reached a spot where they were sure no one would see them go. Shepard showed Jack to one of the ship's miniature staterooms, then went to get out of her armor and back into some regular clothes. When she arrived in the wardroom amidships, she found Jack, still in her own armor, sitting back in the corner of one of the couches and regaling Caden, Garrus, and Liara with a short rundown of some of her adventures since they'd last met. "Ran with some Asari commandos for a while, that was pretty sweet. Spent 6 months learning spirit pathways on Dantrov, that was hella sweet. Let's see, what else have I done? Played bass in a punk band, that was pretty good. Couple of years as a side judge on Zardon, figured I'd find out what it was like to wear the boots for a change." She shrugged. "Not as good as you might imagine, so I bailed. Kept the boots, though. Probably still wanted for desertion and theft of Justice Department property. Even did a tour as a sushi ninja on Tomodachi. You like maki rolls? I make great fucking maki rolls." "You worked at Ninja World?" Garrus asked. "What was your sushi ninja handle?" Jack grinned. "Noisy Cricket." "Nice," said Caden. "Me and this other girl in the sushi ninjas, Silent Emerald. We were both escaped human weapons. After Ninja World, we went on the road for a while. She was a magician. We did this double act. Fang the Unconquerable and the amazing Psylocke, Mistress of the Mind. Good times." "You seem much less angry than the last time I saw you," Liara observed. "It's good to see." "Yeah, me and Shepard were talking about that a little," Jack remarked, gesturing to the commander. "I was telling her how it took a while to really sink in, but in the end she screwed my head on right. Not literally, of course. Kind of too bad. I don't usually go for chicks, but there's something about Shepard," she added with a smirk. "Probably it's just that I never scored with anybody who's crazier than me." All right, enough," said Shepard with a dismissive wave as the others laughed. "Stations, if you please, people. Time to get moving. We're on a deadline here." "Guess I'll go get out of this armor," Jack said, rising with the others. "Hope I still remember how to put on my regular clothes. Been a while since I wore anything with a zipper." On the bridge, Shepard noticed that the You Have Mail light was blinking on the little control podium next to her con. She tabbed it and pulled up a holographic display. The message was a reply to one she'd sent before beaming down to Nern. From Erdnot Rex, Rex, Erdnot, dot, Tuchanka. Subject, re, ping. To Virginia Shepard, Shepard, surprise.hv.euph. Date, Sunday, August 6th, 2406, 11/31/24-0400 GST. Rex. Shepard. Rex. From Erdnot Rex, Rex, Erdnot.Tuchanka. Subject, re, ping. To Virginia Shepard, Shepard, surprise.hv.euph. Date, Sunday, August 6th, 2406, 11/34/43-0400 GST. Sorry. Couldn't resist. Rex. Short version because we're both busy people. I'm back and I'm going up against the Collectors. You may have heard of them. Griff asked me to stop them from taking human colonies, and you know how I like a challenge. I understand you're some kind of mucky muck on Tuchanka these days. Any chance you've got some vacation time coming? You have no idea how much I wish I could take you up on this, but I just can't right now. Things are complicated here, and you know how much I like complicated situations. But this is, well, you know what I wanted for Tuchanka. It's taken me a long time. I've been back more than 70 years now, but I'm finally starting to really turn this planet around. You should come and check it out. You won't recognize the place. It's at a very delicate stage right now, though, so I have to stay where I am. Uneasy lies the head and all that crap. I do have a lead for you, though. There's a Krogan warlord named Vokir. Crazy asshole, frankly, but what he's up to may interest you. I had to throw him off Tuchanka because he was messing with my plans. Short version is, he's trying to do some nutty cloning experiment to sidestep the genophage. I'm good with that, but not the crazy political agitating he was doing, so I got him out of the picture here without stopping his project. Here's where you'll be interested. I heard from one of his former supporters that he did a deal with the Collectors for some of their bio-aug tech. That's when a lot of them figured he'd gone too far and broke with him. Last I heard, he'd set up shop on O3F8, the scrapyard planet in the Outer Rim territories. Don't know who's backing him, what stage his project is at, or even if the Collector thing is really true. But under the circumstances, I figured you'd want to check it out. Good luck out there, Shepard. Try not to get killed again before I get a chance to see you. Rex. Shepard read the message twice, then sat back in her con and thought for a few seconds. Caden, she said. Caden half swiveled so he could see her. Yeah? How much extra time would it take for us to divert to O3F8? The junk planet? Shepard nodded. Wait one. Caden swiveled back to his console, consulted the navigational panel, then turned back. It's not too far off our route to Scandia, he said. Probably add 12 flight hours overall, plus however long we spend there. What's on O3F8? Not sure, Shepard said. Rex thinks there's a Krogan warlord there who might know something about the Collectors. With travel times like that, I figure it's probably worth checking out. Caden nodded and turned to the console again. I'll lay it in. ETA sometime Tuesday. I'll have a better estimate for you in a few minutes. Shepard nodded. Good deal. Tuesday, August 8th, 2406. Planet 03F8, Emir System. Kant Sector, Outer Rim Territories. Well, here we are, Caden said, gesturing with mock gravity to the viewer. Welcome to O3F8, Commander. Shepard got up and walked toward the screen, taking in the unedifying spectacle of the planet's smudged atmosphere and battle-scarred surface. Inviting, she said dryly. Then, pointing to what appeared to be an impact crater in the northern hemisphere, she asked, "What happened there?" "There used to be a skyhook city suspended above there," Garrus explained. "Ooh, what went wrong?" "Two words, lovely angel." "Ah." "Hmm," said Liara. "This is interesting. It appears there's a firefight in progress in the sector we're here to investigate." Shepard turned away from the view to look at her. "Do tell." Liara peered into the sensor scope for a moment, adjusting the gain controls. "Blaster and conventional fire, small explosions. It's hard to estimate numbers from here, but there must be a fairly significant concentration for their activities to register on these sensors." She looked up from the scope to meet Shepard's eyes. "It appears we aren't the only ones interested in Okira's project, whatever it may be." "Terrific," Shepard grumbled. Then she turned to face the others and said brightly, "So, who wants to beam into the toxic scrap heap battle zone with me?" "Garrus does. I heard him saying he was looking forward to it," Caden remarked. Garrus spread his hands. "Not it." Leaning against the wall by the science station, Jack snorted, "Ah, you pair of wimps. Fine, the girls will go." Turning to Arna, she jerked her head toward the door and said, "Come on, kid. Let's go so these two can paint each other's nails in private." In keeping with the vessel's standing as a deniable operations vessel, the armory adjoining the Surprise's main transporter room was stocked with clean equipment, discreetly sourced through military surplus channels and then shorn of any identifying markings it might once have possessed. There was nothing in here that would give any concrete indication of its owner's affiliation, if captured or recovered from a battlefield. Shepard glumly examined her wrecked N7 armor again, sighed, and opened one of the armory lockers. "I guess I'm going to have to wear this ODST stuff," she said resignedly. Standing in front of another locker, Arna locked down one of her vambraces, then flexed her gloved hand experimentally, testing the fit. She glanced at Shepard and said, "It's perfectly good armor. A generation or two out of date, true, but I shouldn't think that would bother you, given the relic you were wearing." Shepard arched an eyebrow at her, then reached into the locker and started removing pieces of armor. "Watch your mouth," she said. "CVR-9 was the gold standard for special ops armor for 150 years. Taking off her hoodie, she hung it on a hook in the locker, then started clambering into the chest piece of the ODST suit, fumbling slightly with the unfamiliar fittings. "Anyway, it's not whether it's current that's the problem. I just don't like Seleucian armor." She shrugged a couple of times to settle her breastplate and pauldrons, rotated her right shoulder partway up and down, and sighed again. "Too heavy. It's like they designed it assuming it would be powered and then decided not to. Ah, well, at least the boots are good," she went on, removing those articles from the locker. Nothing more was said until, having finished with their armor, they started checking over their weapons. In Arna's case, this was a quick and simple process. The Oricon PP-AR-4 assault rifle she found in one of the weapon racks was not, unlike the one she'd brought away from Eden Prime, instantly identifiable as the property of Earth Force, but it was the same model, and thus she was well acquainted with it. The routine checks took her all of 4 seconds. Shepard was no slower with her inspection and stowage procedures, but she had more gear to stow. While Arna watched, she checked over and secured about her person no fewer than 4 weapons, as well as what looked like enough ammunition capacitors to power a small aero spacecraft if you wired them together right. "Are you anticipating a fight, or the need to supply a minor revolutionary movement?" she wondered. Shepard grinned. "Everything here has a very specific niche and purpose, Lieutenant," she said. "This is for if they get too close," she said, touching the unfamiliar blocky shape mounted at the small of her back. "This is for things that are far away," she went on, indicating George. "This is for stuff in the middle, she said, picking up her mattock from the armory workbench in front of her. And that's for if everything else gets broken, she added with a nod to the old carnifex that still lay on the bench. Arna looked more closely at the side of the rifle in Shepard's hands. In all the fuss on Eden Prime, she hadn't noticed that there was a non-standard label on it, affixed to the flat plate just above the trigger assembly on the right side of the weapon. "This machine kills fascists?" she read. Shepard sighted in the rifle, then collapsed it and stashed it on her back next to George before looking questioningly at Arna. "Woody Guthrie?" she said, but got only a blank look and a shake of the head in reply. Shepard sighed. "Kids these days." Jack breezed in, dressed exactly as she'd been on the bridge, apart from having added a coat and a pair of gold blade mirror shades. "What do you say, ladies?" she inquired. "Is that what you're planning to wear?" Arna asked. Jack looked faintly puzzled. Yeah, she replied. Arna eyed her. "You did hear that we're beaming into a combat zone, right?" Shepard chuckled. Unlike Arna, she remembered Jack's fashion choices from the old days, and by those standards, she was practically outfitted for Arctic survival. Sure, her jeans might have been more whole than denim, but she was wearing an entire t-shirt, albeit one with the slogan, "Fuck the Police," printed on it in cheerful white block capitals, and a flappy black leather coat, and, as previously advertised, a pair of lug-soled Zardon judge's boots. At her belt, she wore a heavy pistol on one side and that nasty-looking axe she'd sported on Nern on the other. "In a gunfight, armor just gets in my way, kid," Jack said breezily. "We gonna do this or what?" They hit the surface in a carefully chosen location at the edge of what appeared to be the trouble spot, close enough that they wouldn't have to walk all day to get to the action, but far enough out that they wouldn't be beaming straight into a firefight. O3F8 had a galaxy-wide reputation for its vast scrap yards, but the area the three from the surprise beamed into was something else again. Instead of the sprawling expanses of scrap metal and junked electronics that the planet's name conjured up in the public mind, the vista that confronted Shepard, Arna, and Jack upon arrival was one of huge, haphazardly scattered masses of metal. It took Arna a few moments of puzzled contemplation to realize that they were starship hulls, stripped of anything that might have had more than scrap value, and then dumped wherever gravity cared to drop them. Those that could rust, had. Those that couldn't seemed like they might have given it a try anyway, out of solidarity. Just looking at the expanse of leaning, rotting scrap before her made Arna feel a need to update her tetanus immunization. "Oh, this is lovely," she remarked sourly, charging her PPG rifle. Off in the distance, somewhere in the maze of hulks, the three could hear bursts of small arms fire and the dull thuds of far-off explosions. Jack put her hands on her hips, took a deep breath through her nose, and let it out through her mouth, puffing her cheeks. "Yep," she said with evident satisfaction. "I am definitely back in Shepard's posse now." Turning a wry grin to the young Earth Force trooper, she added, "Stick with us, kid. We'll take you to all the best places." Arna gave her a dark look, but said nothing, instead moving out to take point. Jack glanced at Shepard and shrugged. "I don't think she likes me," she said in a tone of voice that betrayed little concern about the fact. "I think it's just that her worldview isn't built to contain you," Shepard replied dryly, readying her mattock. "She'll adapt." Jack nodded. "Or she'll have a psychotic episode," she said agreeably, then grinned. "Which could be fun." Before Shepard could reply, she perked up and pointed. "Heads up! Incoming Krogan!" Sure enough, across the slightly canted metal decking that made up the ground ahead of them came a battle-suited Krogan, charging straight toward them with a sustained roar. "Well, this must be the place, then," Shepard observed. "Krogan charging!" Arna barked, a trifle belatedly, Jack thought. Then, to Shepard and Jack's bemusement, she held her ground and opened fire, apparently not thinking to take cover. Only when the Krogan was about a second from impact did it dawn on her that she wasn't going to bring him down before he hit her, and then she was flat on her back with rust-streaked boot prints all up the front of her. The Krogan kept going, straight over her, but, though Arna's fire hadn't dropped him, it had wounded him seriously. Shepard was able to stop him with little difficulty. Jack didn't even have to get involved. With a faint smirk, the latter trotted past the sprawled body of the Krogan to help Arna up. "You really haven't been off the farm long, have you, kid?" she remarked with a grin as she took hold of one of Arna's hands. "You don't just stand there and shoot at a charging Krogan. Even if you kill him, he's still going to run you over before he drops." "So, noted," Arna grunted as she was hauled to her feet. "And for the record," she added as she checked herself and her gear for damage, "I'm from Kharkiv. We don't have farms there." Shepard knelt by the fallen Krogan and checked him over. This guy's gear is all brand new." Jack walked over and stood looking down. "Sure is," she agreed. "Low-budget merc-grade junk, but new." She shrugged. "Rex did say Okir was doing cloning experiments." Shepard straightened up. "Great," she said. "Another Vermeier. That's just what we needed on top of everything else. I thought this place looked too orderly. It's been configured." She pointed. "See the corridors? Choke points, lots of low walls, catwalks, weird angles. It's an infantry proving ground. Simulated urban war zone, like the one they used to use for selection in the old WDF Special Ether Service." She looked up at the sound of another distant burst of gunfire. "Okay, let's go see what the hell's going on over there." The mystery only deepened with their next encounter, which was 100 yards or so further into the maze. A guard post of sorts, hastily erected where a narrow angle between two sagging hull sections made for a natural choke point. This was manned not by Krogan and brand-new cut-rate tactical gear, but rather a mix of humans and Batarians in much higher quality, distinctly liveried combat armor. They opened fire all the same, driving Arna, Shepard, and Jack into cover behind various bits of jumbled scrap. "Well, I see the Blue Suns are still assholes," Jack observed cheerfully, taking the axe from her belt. Shepard raised herself briefly from behind the shelter of her upturned deck plate and flatlined one of the Suns' shields before ducking back down to avoid a spray of counterfire. Glancing over at Jack, she took note of the weapon and remarked with a grin, "I bet some of these guys have never seen an axe before." "Yeah, well, if they're wondering what it's for, they'll find out in a minute," Jack replied. The air around her rippled blue-silver with an audible rumbling sound as she raised her biotic barrier. Then she vaulted the barricade she'd been crouched behind, landed on the other side, and uttered a single syllable in a voice like thunder. "Wold!" The word seemed to propel her as though a bomb had gone off behind her, hurling her into the Sun's midst in an eye blink. Shepard recognized the maneuver as a variation on something Asari vanguards liked to do, a biotically augmented charge, so explosively fast it almost seemed like teleportation. Shouting in consternation, the Suns fell back, opening fire, but they might as well have been trying to shoot an ocean wave or the wind. Fractured armor plates and broken weapons flew in all directions as Jack lit into them with the savagery of a storm. She didn't even bother drawing her pistol, letting the axe and a series of psychokinetic shockwaves do all the talking instead. Within seconds, she stood unopposed amid the wreckage of what had been a lookout point, surrounded by sprawled figures. Some were silent, others softly moaning, and none interested in defending the position any longer. Shepard looked appraisingly around as she and a wide-eyed Arna moved up to join Jack. "Not bad," she said. "Pfft," Jack replied, tossing her axe in the air and then returning it to her belt. "I'm the best there is, and you know it." "You're not a very subtle weapon," Shepard observed. Look who's talking, said Jack. Christ's sake, a gravelly voice said from up ahead of them. Who the hell taught you to do that? As if you weren't dangerous enough already. The three looked to see a weather-beaten, gray-haired man in well-traveled red and silver armor, standing by an upturned slab of cast-off starship plating. He regarded them with a hard-to-read expression that might have been sardonic amusement, and though he held a Hyperion Sentinel combat rifle in his hands, it wasn't aimed at them or anything else in particular. Shepard and Arna didn't recognize him, but Jack's face lit up in a slightly wry grin. Well, 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 she said. Who let you out of your cage, old man? The man stepped away from the wall, slinging his sentinel.
Ah, you know how it is, Jack, he replied. You're having a boring day in the office. And then the chief calls up and asks if you'd like to shoot a few blue suns as a personal favor to him.
Jack smirked. Yeah, figures that'd get you off the couch. Small galaxy, huh? Shit, I haven't seen you since Pandora. You're looking old. He snorted.
It ain't the years, sweetheart, it's the mileage, he said.
Then, stepping around her, he approached Shepard.
You, Commander Shepard. Zaid Massani. Chief reckons you could use another gun.
He's probably right about that, Shepard replied, shaking his hand. You know anything more than we do about the situation here? Zaid shook his head.
Not a lot. Only that yet another Blue Sun's district manager's gone wannabe warlord, he said. Crazy bitch named Jador. She's bankrolling some Krogan scientist, if you can believe that such a thing exists, in hopes of raising an army. So far, it looks like all she's got for her trouble is a lot of attrition, which makes her Vito's goddamn employee of the year in my book.
Personal beef? Shepard wondered.
Very.
Zaid and Jack replied in unison, then glanced at each other. Shepard stifled a laugh. Well, let's see about breaching their perimeter, she said. I want to have a frank exchange of views with this Krogan scientist. 72 minutes later. Or not, Jack mused, looking down at the sprawled body of Warlord O'Keer. On the video screen above the body, the image of a slightly less dead O'Keer addressed Shepard as though he'd known she was approaching, and indeed what she wanted. Most of his remarks were a semi-coherent manifesto about ignoring the genophage, whatever that meant. There was a lot about O'Keer's perfect legacy, and his wish for Shepard to see to it that this was preserved and allowed to achieve its destined purpose. Possibly rendered delirious by the poisoned gas his former employer had been pumping into the laboratory by that point, the warlord wandered off into impenetrably philosophical territory toward the end, then collapsed into the position where the surprise team found him a few minutes later. Shepard played the message twice, failed to make head or tail out of most of it, then turned and regarded the object standing next to the console where O'Keer had made his last recording. Well, she observed dryly, no bonus points for guessing what his perfect legacy is.
No,
Arna agreed slowly. Can we keep him? Jack asked. Shepard didn't reply for a moment, lost in contemplation of the biotank and the young Krogan evidently sleeping within it. Then she smiled slightly and said, I don't know, Jack. A Krogan is a big responsibility. What exactly are you planning to do with this? Caden wondered as he and Adams made sure the biotank was secure in the Surprise's cargo hold. Shepard, back in her street clothes, shrugged. Not sure. I figured I'd ask our next recruit and see what he thinks. She double-checked one of the readouts on the tank's control module. According to this, he ought to keep for at least a year, so it'll wait until we get to Scandia. When the three finished their job, they split up, Adams returning to the engine room while Shepard and Caden headed for the bridge. Upon arrival, Shepard inquired, Liara, any luck? Liara turned in her seat and smiled. It took a bit of wrangling with WDFHQ's comm staff, but I was eventually able to reach General Anderson. He didn't believe me at first when I told him you were alive, but I was able to convince him. He's dispatching one of their disaster response teams to collect the survivors from O'Kear's rejects. Shepard sat down in her con. Outstanding, she said. If anybody can help those poor jerks, it's Anderson. What do you say, Caden? Let's move out. Caden resumed his station. Roger that, he said. Course plotted and locked. Next stop, Scandia CN-38. Solus, Warden, PhD Biology, University of Sirkesh, MD, Harvard Medical School, Solarian Union Special Task Group, 2282-2310. Most activities with STG remain classified. Believed to have been team lead on STG project to acquire Omega-2 retrovirus covertly from WDF-LSD circa 2285 and reverse engineering Solarian equivalent. Obvious life extension. Suspected of involvement in secret genophage maintenance project on Tuchanka, assassination of human supremacist terrorist leader codenamed Elusive Man, rather a lot else. Nothing proven. Key publications too numerous to list. Resident of Quarian Union since that nation's founding in 2357. Semi-official medico-scientific advisor to Quarian government. Friday, August 11th, 2406. Test Settlement 1, Soliston. Halo, Scandia CN-38 System, Quarian Union, Kresge Sector. The surprise barely fit in the largest revetment the Test Settlement 1 Science Center had, its upraised wings looming over the walls. Shepard, Liara, and Garrus disembarked and headed into the bunker-like building, receiving visitors' passes at the entrance hall. The Quarian guard on duty directed them to the elevator and told them that Dr. Solus was waiting for them in the main laboratory. They arrived at the back of the upper level to find the sprawling main lab looking as if it had been ransacked by burglars. Equipment lay strewn upon the floor or tilted haphazardly on benches. Datapads and notepaper lay in random places, and at least two significant liquid spills puddled on the tile floor. Just as they entered, they were treated to the startling spectacle of an elderly and distinguished Solarian scientist hurling himself full length across a laboratory bench, scattering glassware in a tinkling cascade, as though desperately attempting to catch an outfield fly ball. "Blast!" Morden Solus cried. "Missed again! Talizora, look out!" "I have it," a young-sounding Quarian woman replied from the other side of the lab, her stance tense and ready like a goaltender's. A small, flying something zipped past her. She lunged for it, overturning a metal gas cylinder that clanged gaily to the floor and rolled into a corner, but missed. "Bostet!" she snarled. The flying object swerved to avoid the far wall and headed for the open door. Shepard, recognizing it as one of the seeker bugs she and Caden had encountered on Eden Prime, automatically drew the only weapon she was carrying, though she was reasonably sure firing a Carnifex in an enclosed space at a target the size of a hummingbird wasn't a good idea. "Heads up! Bug!" she declared. "Close that door!" the Quarian shouted to them. Shepard sprang aside to the left, thinking that she might be able to bat it down with her pistol. Next to her, Garrus was too bemused by what he'd just seen Morden do to take any action other than stepping to the right. That left Liara standing dead center in the doorway, looking faintly puzzled about the whole affair. The seeker darted either toward her or the open door behind her, no one was really sure which, but without missing a beat, she casually reached out and plucked it from the air. "Got you," she said. "Be careful, Liara, they..." Shepard began, but before she could finish the sentence, the seeker had stung Liara's hand. "Oh, bother," said Liara, and then she froze in place, standing in the doorway like a mannequin. "Ah," said Morden, sounding delighted, as he climbed down from the bench he'd thrown himself onto. "Excellent work, Professor Tassoni. Thank you." He rummaged in the mess near another of the benches, came up with a clear acrylic storage canister and a pair of tongs, crossed to Liara's side, gently prized the struggling seeker out of her paralyzed hand with the tongs, put it in the canister, and secured the lid. There. Seeker contained. That job done, he leaned closer to Liara, studying her intently. Her eyes, apparently the only parts of her that could still move, swiveled to regard him in turn. Perfect opportunity to test stasis antidote. One moment. He took a spray hypo from the sleeve pocket of his lab coat, then turned to Shepard and nodded to her in greeting. Shepard, delighted to see you again. Professor Tassoni likely to lose motor function temporarily when released from stasis. Recommend you position yourself so she won't fall. Reduce probability of injury. Right, said Shepard. She put away the Carnifex and placed herself accordingly, standing behind Liara with her arms to either side. Over Liara's shoulder, she could see Garrus standing off to one side, arms folded, looking smug and totally not like he was using his combat visor to record everything. She rolled her eyes at him, but that only made him smirk. Ready? Warden asked. When she nodded, he raised the hypo and injected its contents into the side of Liara's neck. For a second, nothing happened. Then the Asari went completely limp, sagging backward. Shepard caught her, hooking her arms under Liara's and more or less hugging her from behind to keep her from falling. It took only a few seconds for control of Liara's body to return to her. She got her footing back, stepped a little unsteadily out of Shepard's arms, then shook her head and said, "Thanks," either to her, Morden, or both. "Nasty creature," Morden observed, regarding the canister within which the Seeker was buzzing furiously around. "Not technically a bug, though. Biomechanical robot, only looks like insect. Wrong number of legs, anyway." He put the canister inside a larger specimen isolation container, an aquarium-like transparent tank with a big, jagged hole broken out of one side of it. "Underestimated acceleration of which it's capable in flight," he remarked, indicating the hole. "Won't make that mistake again." He turned and regarded the shambles of his lab. "A minor setback." "Is that the one I caught on Eden Prime?" Shepard asked. "I was pretty sure I'd killed it." Morden shook his head. "Not dead. Not actually alive. Robot. Systems relatively easy to repair. Hope to inquire insight into potential countermeasures." "Any luck?" Garrus asked. "Some," Morden replied. "You've seen antidote to stasis effect. Close to completing system for preventing detection in first place." "Morden," said the Quarian, coming up behind him. "Is this them?" "Yes," said Morden. "Sorry. Should have introduced you. Virginia Shepard, Garrus Vakarian, Liara Tassoni. My niece, non-biologically speaking, of course, Talizora Naraya." Shepard offered a hand. "Hiya. Any relation to Keverin Zoravos Archangel?" Tali nodded as she shook the hand. "He was my great-great-grandfather. He died long before I was born." "We were shipmates long ago," said Shepard. "I know," Tali told her. "My grandfather's told me many of his grandfather's war stories. It's an honor to finally meet you." She hesitated, as if unsure how to say the next part, then went on, "And a bit of a surprise, since I was given to understand that you were killed in 2288. Shepard grinned. "I got better." If she had been able to see Tali's eyebrows, Shepard would have bet one of them was raised as the young Quarian replied, "Uh-huh." "It's complicated," Shepard said, shrugging. Then she asked, "How soon can you be ready to go, Morden? We need to get on this thing as quick as we can." "Already preparing to move out when specimen breached containment," Morden replied. "Should be ready to go by the time you finish your other errands in the system." Shepard looked intrigued. "Other errands?" "Yes, here." Morden took a datapad from an inside pocket of his lab coat and handed it to her. "Supplementary information from the chief. Arrived with specimen, other data. Can't trust hyperwave. Someone else in Scandia you need to see. He gestured to Tali. Tali Zora will go with you. I'm technically supposed to be where you're going anyway, Tali explained, and you'll need someone with fleet clearance along to get you into the patrol zone.